Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Time for to look at stories from other parts of the world that you don't normally hear about. Jonathan DeBurka Butler is here as our guide once again. Afternoon, Jonathan.
John, how are you getting on?
Now, I suppose this first story does relate to something people are aware of, which were the repeated attacks on supposed drug deal by American forces on supposed ships carrying drugs into the United States.
Narco-terrorists, Sean, they were called. And this was all part of what the U.S. administration says was an operation in a non-international armed conflict against alleged traffickers. Now, it started off in September, but since September, I think they've done carried out 36 actions and they've killed over 120 people. It's quite extraordinary stuff. Most of it in the Caribbean, but some in the Eastern Pacific as well. And the families of two men from Trinidad who were killed in an operation specifically on the 14th of October have launched a case against the United States government, right? So they filed a claim in a federal court in Boston against the government for wrongful death, basically. And they're able to do that under a law called Death on the High Seas, the Death on the High Seas Act, okay? Which allows families to sue for wrongful deaths on the high seas and also allows foreigners to sue in U.S. courts for violating international law. So that's what they're trying for.
Yeah. And this Death on the High Seas Act, it's an American law, is it? Or is it international law?
No. I think it's an American law, and so they're able to bring that, but I'm open to correction on it.
Yeah, John, okay. Yeah, so these two particular chaps, they're from Trinidad.
Yeah.
And what were the circumstances of their deaths?
Yeah, so the individuals involved, a man by the name of Chad Joseph and Rishi Samaru, they along with four others were on a boat. According to their families, they were on their way back from Venezuela to Trinidad. They had been working in Venezuela on farms and various things like that. And they were just heading back on the boat that they had. They're involved in fishing and farming. And then all of a sudden they were attacked because they were suspected of trafficking. Now, the case has been brought by the relatives of these individuals. Obviously, the mother of Chad Joseph has basically stressed that her son was innocent. And she said that he should have been arrested, charged and detained, not murdered, if they believed that there was something going on that shouldn't have been going on. And this is going to be central to the argument of the case, I feel, that basically what the Americans have done here or what the administration have done here is completely illegal. And a lot of people would agree with them, Sean.
Yeah. And the particular ship they were on, was it sunk? Was it towed into a port? Were there drugs found on it?
No, I don't think so. I think they were killed and it was sunk. So there was no attempt, as far as I am aware, to arrest them here even. It was just completely taken out. I don't know what warnings were given, if any, but it seems that the people taking the case have a lot of grounds for success or to be optimistic.
Is there, presumably the US government is going to have to prove we were justified in this attack and bring forth the evidence of what they felt was on the ship, etc., etc.?
Well, in a normal world, you know, this is all, you know, you have to base this on that this is going to happen in a normal world.
Yeah.
So what I suspect might happen here is that they'll go to this federal court in Boston. The federal court will find in favor of these people, but then it might go up the chain.
It'll up be to appealed. The Supreme Court.
And the Supreme Court will throw it out. It'll be thrown out.
Is this the first suit of its kind taken by someone involved in
the United States? It is. So there is another case that's been taken by a Colombian family, but that's been taken to the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. So I think that's an organization that, you know, that America, Canada, and then Central and Southern American countries have signed up to. But how much power it has, I don't know. So this will be the first case in the United States that will be taken.
Yeah, and there's no indication that if they were successful, that are the families paid compensation or what would be the ruling?
Yeah, that I don't know. I really don't know because I'm not sure what precedents are there in terms of these actions being taken, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there must be precedents there for wrongful death on the seas, and that's what these laws are about. But those wrongful deaths, I don't know if they've been caused in this manner before.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Indeed, yes. Right, Burkina Faso, we're going to go to next, where they've banned political parties.
Yes, in short. So Burkina Faso over the last number of years has been going through something of a transition. It's always had a bit of a tumultuous history since its independence in 1960 from France, right? So they've had no fewer than 8 military coups there. And the last one was in 2022. Well, actually, there was 2 in 2022. So as you might remember, because we've spoken about it before, in the build-up in the few years leading up to that, Burkina Faso, like a lot of countries in the area, was having a lot of trouble with militants, particularly connected to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. And the civilian government, it was felt by some anyway, weren't able to get a handle on that. Mm-hmm. And so there was a military coup in early 2022 that was successful. And then 8 months later, there was another one.
Another military coup. One part of the military disapproved of what another
exactly.
part. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
And so you had Captain Ibrahim Traore come to power. He was 34 at the time, so he's 37 now. Now, he had always promised that he would return Burkina Faso to proper democracy and civilian government would come back. But lo and behold, when that was supposed to happen in mid-2024, about 2 months before it, he said, no, we're not ready yet, so we're going to hang on to power for another 5 years.
Wow.
And as part of that, he decided to ban public gatherings, which obviously meant that political rallies weren't allowed. And now he is drafting legislation which will ban all political parties. And that will undoubtedly get through what's called the Transitional Legislative Assembly. And so there will be no more political parties.
Yeah. Now, are the ordinary citizens at Burkina Faso, how are they reacting to this? Or they can't really,
well,
can
there
they?
There's social media, and so there has been a bit of reaction criticising it, as you'd imagine, but there's also supporters. I mean, the main argument that the now government is putting across, or the junta is putting across, is they're saying, look, there's 100 political parties in this country, and it's really, politics is very fragmented here. Mm. So what we need to do is we need to get rid of them, take those 5 years to, quote, rebuild the state and the numerous abuses of the state that's happening within the state, and we'll come back to civilian rule in 5 years' time. So an awful lot of people agree with that, and they say, well, you know, there's a lot of corruption in these political parties. Some of them aren't even political parties. They're just covers, while others are saying, you know, it's a dark day for democracy. It's interesting that when there was a parliament, 15 of these 100 political parties had representatives in the parliament. Sorry. Mm. So not all of them were very effective. That meant that there was 85 or more than 85.
Who didn't even get elected.
So, you know, maybe it could do with a bit of streamlining, shall we say, but it could be done in a better way. This is certainly seems to be a bit undemocratic.
Yeah, but Traore has his fans. He's kind of got a vision for Africa a bit.
He's a pan-African. He's into that kind of stuff. East, I think.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of coups in this part of the world over the last number of years. You've got quite a few juntas operating in this area as well. So they'd all be feeding off each other to the extent that they've organized themselves into a kind of an economic grouping, in fact, as opposed to ECOWAS, isn't it called?
Yeah.
So, you know, amongst that cohort, he would certainly be popular.
Right. OK. Right. Indonesia, we're going to go to next. Now, it's not actually Indonesia per se as one particular state within Indonesia who you've mentioned to us many times before. Perhaps remind people of where we're talking about.
Yeah, so this is Aceh, so up in the north. It's population of about 5.5 million people. And it's I know I've said it before, but it's worth saying again, they were very heavily affected by the tsunami, which was, I can't remember, was it 2001 or 2002? I can never remember. Anyway, that tsunami that killed hundreds of thousands of people. And what seems to have happened is that a place that is deeply conservative anyway reacted to that almost in a sort of with a group psychology, which basically says we're being punished by God here, right? And a few years after that, it was granted special autonomy by the government in 2006, and it used that autonomy to bring in these rules, which align more with conservative values.
And the fact that it was given autonomy, was that to do with there may have been kind of military problems if they didn't give that to them?
There had been a civil war that had been going on from 1979, I think, up until 2006, right, when this deal was signed. And that stopped all of a sudden. But it was part of a great reform that was going on in Indonesia at the time. But I suppose we're living with the consequences of this more now, right?
Yeah.
Because about 10 years after that autonomy was given, these stricter laws came in, right? So it's your classic sort of conservative Sharia stuff that's going on. So gambling, homosexual acts, sex outside of marriage, alcohol, all of those kind of things are punishable. By caning. They were going to bring stoning in at one point, but that was stopped, thankfully. So in this particular instance, and the reason we're talking about it now, is because a couple in Indonesia were caned no fewer than 140 times each, okay, for having sex outside of marriage and drinking alcohol. So it was 100 times for the sex outside of marriage, 40 times for the alcohol. One of the victims, and I'm going to call them victims in this case, was a 21-year-old woman who fainted after she was given those 140 lashes. I don't even know, to tell you the truth, if she got through to the end.
Yeah.
But she was carried out. There's pictures of it. And this is the bizarre, almost perverse thing about it, is that these, you know, this was done in a public park. There was people watching, and you can see footage, not necessarily of this, but of other instances where people are looking on and they're kind of going, oh, yeah, you know, kind of enjoying it.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
But she was carried off in a stretcher and brought to hospital. I mean, the force of these lashes is so strong that three female officers had to take turns because their arms were getting tired in order to dish out this punishment. It's crazy stuff.
Yeah. And is there any pushback against this within other parts of Indonesia even, within Aceh itself?
I don't think so within Aceh.
Yeah.
I mean, as I said, it is very conservative there. If there is pushback in it in other parts of Indonesia, which I'm sure there is, because it's, as you said, it's the only place where this happens. I haven't heard that much about it, I have to say. Has it got to the point where they're talking about reforming it? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
If that answers your question,
yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Right, Mozambique, we're going to go to next. And we're not the only country that's been suffering from flooding. So what's been happening there?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk. I heard your item with Henry, a lot of talk here about the rain, but we're not dealing with the consequences of it in the way that Mozambique is. The flooding has got so bad here that crocodiles have started to appear in submerged towns. Okay, so this is along the River Limpopo, which flows from South Africa through Mozambique and goes out into the Indian Ocean. But it appears that there's so much water that these crocodiles are being pushed out of their normal areas and are coming into the towns, with the result that three people have died having been attacked by these crocodiles. So two were killed in an attack that left three others injured in an area called Gaza, which is down in the south of the country. Yeah, not just Gaza in the Middle East, which is in the south of the country. And then another man was, quote, swallowed near the capital of Maputo when he was out and came across one of these crocodiles, unfortunately. So a very real situation. 13 people have been killed so far in flood-related deaths. And as I said, three of those because of crocodiles.
Yeah. But leaving aside the crocodiles, the devastation from these floods in Mozambique has been enormous.
Oh, huge. I mean, obviously, that's the most dramatic story that comes from it. But there is, worsening humanitarian crisis there. I mean, I think 700,000 people have been affected. And this particular region down the south only has a population of about 1.5 million. So that's nearly half the population there that have been affected. 50,000 people have had to be moved. There's talk of hospitals have been destroyed. 44 facilities, I believe, are gone now. And then you're looking at cholera and everything else that comes with it coming down the tracks. So it's a real problem. Yeah. And it's not just Mozambique. South Africa and Zimbabwe are actually being affected as well. But it doesn't seem to be as bad there as it is in Mozambique.
Yeah. And these, just shows the extreme weather events can be found all over the world. Mm. It should be said. Right, we'll move on now to the UK, where, I don't know why I'm laughing, a primary school teacher has been banned for doing what?
Well, he was drinking beer in the classroom and eating a mint, mints after.
So no one would suspect a thing.
That's what he was trying to do. This is an individual by the name of Stephen Ward, who had been working at the Southwark Primary School in Nottingham since September of 2014. Now, this is what I find strange about this. This incident actually, or these incidents, happened in November of 2023. But it seems that he had something of a clean slate up until then. So I don't know what happened here in and around November to sort of trigger this behaviour. But it appears that two witnesses who haven't been named, which might suggest that they were students, said that they had seen him drinking from a blue can that looked like BrewDog's Punk IPA. Now, I don't know whether in this conduct panel that was carried out, whether somebody put this BrewDog in front of them and said, did it look like this? Or did the kids recognise BrewDog?
Which throws up another set of questions.
Exactly. Yeah. But anyway, that's what they said. One witness said that he would drink from the can around every 5 minutes on average and then consume a mint after that. Another witness said it was every 15 minutes, so they didn't get their timings quite right. But the main thing is that he has been found guilty of professional misconduct, and he won't be allowed to teach for the next 3 years. He can apply for the prohibition order to be set aside on the 22nd of January 2029, so that's 3 years from now. One would think that he has a bit of other struggles that he might need to get through in the meantime.
And was it just on the one day that he was drinking from the can of beer?
No. Well, it was on the one day, I think, that he was drinking from the can of beer, but on a separate occasion, another witness, and I don't know if this was a colleague or who it was, reported a strong smell of alcohol upon entering a room that Mr. Ward was in, saying it was strong enough to smell, or it was a strong enough smell to notice it instantly when walking into a large two-person office. So obviously the mints didn't work in that particular instance.
And Mr. Ward himself, has he admitted to this? Or?
No, he said that there's been a witch hunt against him. He said that, this was something that he wouldn't have done. He said that there was a very realistic possibility that he had put a can onto his desk. He said that it could not have been alcohol, saying that it was not something that he would ever do. But the panel didn't believe him, so he's now lost his job. Okay. Obviously, it's an amusing sort of a story in ways, but obviously serious problems there for this individual.
Indeed, yeah. All right, so what's going to be happening over the next week or so?
Yeah, so interesting things. I don't know if this has happened yet, but I thought I'd include it, that Trump is going to be meeting Gustavo Petro, who's the president of Colombia.
Interesting.
They do not like each other at all, and they're very public about that. Mm. So I'm really curious to see how this is going to go. Apparently, there's been a softening of attitudes between the two men over the last number of days.
Well, funny enough, when Trump meets people that he publicly declares he doesn't like, he tends to come out of those meetings liking them.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Maybe he respects that.
It's mad. But anyway, at least they're going to meet each other face to face. Then on Thursday, Six Nations Rugby is obviously
so weird on a Thursday.
It's very strange.
It's just wrong.
It's not right. Yeah. And the reason for that is because on Friday, the Winter Olympics are beginning in Milan, and the television company that wants to cover that has the rights to cover both of those events once the Grand Slam game to be moved back to Thursday. So there you go. Then on Sunday, there's early parliamentary elections in Japan and Thailand, presidential election, a runoff in Portugal, and then on Sunday night, all the razzmatazz of the Super Bowl.
Right.
So lots going on.
Lots going on there. Jonathan, thanks a million,
as ever.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.